There was a certain amount of trepidation in Humboldt County about the legalization of marijuana in California, first medical, then recreational. In some parts of the county, people have been growing cannabis in the shadows for generations, and with legalization comes regulation and rules and bookkeeping and taxation. And it's been a hard transition for growers in the so-called Emerald Triangle, a situation reported by Emily Wick in the recent edition of The New Yorker. And she visits with us to talk about her time in Humboldt. And Emily, I think it's been a challenge for you to get to a quiet location this morning.
Yeah, I'm here now. Hi.
I guess you got caught on a train someplace.
I did. Yeah, so, I'm in New York City.
A far distance from Humboldt County. So, Emily, Humboldt County has been under the microscope a bit in the last year. First, there was the Netflix documentary Murder Mountain, which certainly raised a lot of some of the same issues that you raise in your New Yorker article. But what about the area attracted your interest?
Actually, a friend of mine is making a documentary up there about the idea of terroir and cannabis. And she told me that she had met all these farmers and that she felt like the story of how they're dealing with legalization was underreported. So I just decided to go up there and see how it was.
And how long did you spend in Humboldt?
I only spent about a week, a little less than a week. It was in late February. It was when it was pouring rain and a kind of quiet time of year for growers.
So our entire region saw an influx of back-to-the-landers back in the 1960s, not just in Humboldt County, but throughout southern Oregon as well. And a lot of illegal marijuana growing came with that, but the culture became particularly entrenched in Humboldt County. Why was that?
Yeah, I think the back-to-the-landers came up there in the late 60s and early 70s and initially started growing cannabis for their own use. I think, most of those people, as I was told, did a number of jobs. They might fish, they might chop firewood, they would grow a little marijuana on the side and sell it to their friends. But it was more of a side gig and a way to get a little bit of extra cash, but not necessarily make a living from it at the beginning.
Emily Wick is a correspondent with The New Yorker magazine, and she's with us this morning to talk about her article about Humboldt County and the cannabis industry in Humboldt. You can join the conversation this morning by calling us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned, Emily, that a lot of these back-to-the-landers had a bunch of different jobs, and growing cannabis was kind of not necessarily the center of what they were doing. So at some point it made this transition from a cash crop to sort of maybe keep the family homestead afloat with a little bit of extra cash to really big, big business. How did the people that you talked to characterize that process?
Well, it seemed like it was a slow change. First of all, the money was good. And I think the late 80s and early 1990s, you could sell cannabis for $4,000 a pound. So you only needed to grow 10 pounds and you could grow it. I think people were growing more under trees. The risk was much higher back then. And you would grow smaller plants because they would be in the shade and you wouldn't grow as much, but it brought in so much money that it was fine. But then I think things really changed with the passage, the legalization of medical marijuana in 1996 that put growing marijuana into more of a legal gray area. And especially as that decade went on, and especially once Obama was elected president 12 years later, it really became, it was hard to prosecute people. The laws were more and more murky. There was more tolerance for it. And so it was kind of just an unregulated crop that people could grow, slightly hidden, but in much bigger quantities than before.
And it was also, at the time, kind of a situation where people were able to consume marijuana a little bit more out in the open because they had their wink-wink medical marijuana card. So it was probably at the same time slowly, on the consumer end, slowly growing more acceptable as well.
Yeah, and people would post their medical marijuana prescriptions on a fence and use that as a kind of cover. I don't think it always worked if you were growing 1,000 acres of weed or something, but it was harder to prosecute, for sure.
Emily Wick writes for the New Yorker magazine, and she has a new article about cannabis in Humboldt that is in the latest issue of the New Yorker. So, Emily, your article follows a cannabis farmer named Jason Gelman. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Jason Gelman grew up in southern Humboldt County outside of the town of Garberville. His parents were back to the Landers. One, I think his mom came from Los Angeles and his dad from Detroit, or the other way around. And they raised him up on a homestead in a town called Harris. And he grew up helping tend to their marijuana crop. And then as a teenager began working on other people's farms until he acquired enough money to get his own land. And he was kind of typical of a second generation grower, where the hippie ideals that had motivated his parents did not quite motivate him. He was more, this was a career option for him, for somebody that grew up in a rural county without a lot of employment opportunities. This was the best way to make a living, which he did, building a home for his family and a really nice, you know, living for, I don't know, almost 20 years, and then legalization happened.
So his career really spanned that whole transition from the time when he was probably growing marijuana illegally to now trying to cope with the legalization of marijuana.
Yeah, that's right. He's 39 years old, so yeah, he grew up in the 80s. He grew up in the era when the Reagan administration was sending paramilitary troops to the area in helicopters, a program known as CAMP, and grew up through all of these transitions into medical marijuana, and now runs a fully legal farm.
I wanted to ask you about that CAMP program, where, you know, there was a lot of paramilitary activity, you know, on the part of the DEA and other law enforcement authorities in especially Northern California, but also in Southern Oregon. I realize that you weren't involved in the Netflix documentary Murder Mountain, but did you get the sense from talking to people that was really kind of an impetus for a lot of the violence that ended up kind of, you know, happening in Humboldt County?
No, I think, you know, CAMP definitely caused psychological harm to people, from what I understood, having these military style raids on people's properties and with their children present and all of that. It definitely left people psychologically scarred, from what I gathered. But I think the violence that came to Humboldt, which, you know, has a relatively high murder rate for how small of a place and rural of a place it is, I think that came from, you know, it was an unregulated cash-based market with people keeping a lot of cash around. As the 90s progressed and the risk became lower, a lot of people came in that were really just in it to make as much money as they can. You know, like any other career with a pretty low barrier to entry, it attracts people who want to get rich quick, who might not be interested in some of the moral questions that maybe some of the earlier growers asked themselves as they went about their business.
We're talking with Emily Wick. She's a writer for the New Yorker magazine and has a new article in the magazine about Humboldt County and the effect of legalizing cannabis in that county, and in fact, the entire Emerald Triangle. You can join the conversation this morning by giving us a call at 800-838-3760 or shoot us an email if you'd prefer at jx jeffnet.org. Emily, as California was considering legalizing recreational marijuana in the time after medical marijuana passed, and eventually Proposition 64 passed in California legalizing recreational marijuana, we started hearing here at JPR stories about illegal growers in the Emerald Triangle who were really opposed to legalization. Why was that?
Well, I heard a number of different reasons why people were opposed. Some people were upset that the taxes would go to law enforcement, some of the tax revenue, which they saw as their old nemesis. Some people objected to the high taxes. As anybody that grows marijuana knows, there's a cultivation tax in addition to the 15% consumer tax, and it basically means, you know, $150 per pound or more of your crop, depending where you live, goes to the taxes. And I think people knew that the way the law was designed, it didn't really put a cap on size of cultivation. It didn't have any sort of residency requirement either. So it would allow a person that had never done this before, a venture capitalist or somebody like that, to start a really, really giant farm, which is what's happened, especially in Central California. There's farms that are have permits to cultivate thousands of acres of marijuana, whereas in Humboldt, the most of the farms are, you know, 5,000, 10,000 square feet.
We're talking with Emily Wick, a writer for The New Yorker. Going to bring a call in here, actually, from Humboldt County. This is Anna in Humboldt. Anna, you're on the air. Anna, are you here? Hello, Anna. We don't seem to have Anna. She was going to ask a question, Emily, about the mental health in Humboldt County. Did you encounter any issues there?
I did see that people were under a lot of stress. People had put their life savings into making their farms legal, which is a very expensive process. And then the price of marijuana is dropping precipitously. And, you know, people's way of life is changing. And I know a couple of people told me it put a strain on their marriages. You know, people seem genuinely stressed. I think that's true.
And so, as you mentioned, there is you gave an example of a huge marijuana grow operation in Central California. Marijuana is actually growing now all over California, not just in the Emerald Triangle. And, you know, we hear stories here in Oregon of incredible amounts of overproduction because there was sort of a land rush mentality, people moving into the region from outside of the area. So, you know, with this kind of tradition in Humboldt, where you had the back to the landers, and then, as you mentioned, with the person that you profile in your article, Jason Gelman, kind of being the next generation, do you find that there's sort of an insider-outsider conflict there, where the people who have lived in Humboldt for generations and have been involved in cultivating cannabis are now dealing with an influx of outsiders, and there may be some social tensions there?
I think the influx of outsiders actually preceded the legalization it was more during the days of what they call the Green Rush, which was that legal gray period between 1996 and 2018. And, you know, people told me, I think it was maybe a simple explanation to think that, oh, the people that were dropping their pesticides into the river, they're the outsiders, and you know, us hippies and descendants of hippies are the good people with a, you know, we don't need oversight. We take care of our land. I think it was more complicated than that. But actually, since legalization, I think what's happened is a lot of the people that may have come from Texas or from the East Coast to get into the business are realizing it's the market is oversupplied. It's no longer the golden ticket that people might have seen it as, and it's really the contrary, where real estate prices have started dropping, and grocery stores are seeing a huge drop in business because fewer people are getting into it. And I think for people in Humboldt, there's a question of, okay, maybe now, maybe this will be better, and the community will be forced to kind of come together and help each other. People are discussing things like purchasing equipment together, things like that. There's guilds starting and associations, and that maybe it'll revive some of the community spirit that maybe got lost in those years when there was a lot of money pouring in.
So people are actually looking at like farm co-ops, only the crops are different.
Right. But because marijuana is so highly regulated, it's not like you can get together with your friends and grow some cannabis and sell it at a farmer's market in San Francisco, which, you know, would maybe be the ideal scenario for Humboldt, which has its culture, it has its politics, it can brand itself as this kind of heritage product in a way that cannabis grown in a greenhouse in desert Palm Springs or something can't. But because the law mandates use of a distributor, I don't think that branding has come through to a place like Los Angeles. It's not like you can walk into a needs dispensary in Los Angeles and say, hey, I want the special farm grown Humboldt family farm Humboldt marijuana and get that connection isn't there yet, in my experience.
I'm not sure what the analog to the farm to table concept would be when we're talking about cannabis. But, you know, getting back to Jason Gelman, who you follow in your article, it sounds like he is actually moving in that direction to cope with the drop in prices. He's actually looking at branding and having a special type of cannabis, isn't he?
Yeah, so one of the big players in distribution in the Emerald Triangle is a company called Flocana. And there's a couple companies like this. There's, I think, up north, Humboldt and Pop and Barkley that have opened processing centers in the area and are branding their cannabis as being from the Emerald Triangle, as having this heritage, as you know, and they're working with smaller producers deliberately because the founder of Flocana, for example, his name is Mikey Steinmetz, and he seems at least really committed to the family farm and a decentralized model of agriculture. And I think there is a movement around the country in that for food, and because cannabis is still starting from the ground up, maybe there's a way to preserve that culture before it gets centralized and vertically integrated.
We're talking with Emily Wick. She writes for The New Yorker magazine and has an article in the latest issue of The New Yorker about cannabis in Humboldt County. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone or by email. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Emily, I wanted to focus back on some of the potential sort of social conflict areas in Humboldt County. First, I wanted to talk to you about, again, the generational divide. Jason Gelman, the grower that you follow, you mentioned earlier in the segment, perhaps didn't have the same values when it came to growing marijuana that his parents had. Is there still that sort of generational divide? I mean, is there this sense of nostalgia for the 1960s and 1970s and the more communal living arrangements and, you know, days when pot maybe wasn't such a huge part of everybody's lives?
I don't think it's fair to say that he doesn't share those values, because I think the second generation does deeply understand, but there is a lot of nostalgia. One person, a farmer named Rio Anderson, told me that it was kind of like the Wild West, which was only lasted for 4 or 5 years, that peak time, and then it becomes mythologized and held up as this moment. And he said, you know, basically from 1976 to 1981 or two was that time in Humboldt. And you know, in that time and later in the 80s, they built volunteer fire departments. They built a community radio station, KMUD. They started a community center called the Mateel that's kind of famous. There is just a lot of solidarity, and there is a lot of nostalgia for that time. And I think what happened with legalization is the conceit maybe that this group of people had managed to create this countercultural society apart from the rat race and capitalism that was driven by different imperatives, was perhaps that conceit was maintained by the fact that they were able to have this steady income stream. And so there's a little bit of an identity crisis now of now that that money has gone away, how do you, can you still uphold this idea that you're this place apart from the rest of the country where what they would call economic refugees, people that don't fit into mainstream society, that can't function in that setting and prefer this other lifestyle, you know, whether that can still exist.
And is there a growing sense of conflict between people like Jason Gelman, who are jumping through all the legal hoops and the taxation and all the regulations to be an above board legal cultivator, and those who are still choosing to cultivate illegally?
Well, I think what I saw, in fact, was just sympathy, because the people who have gone through legalization are finding it so onerous and so expensive, and many of them have risked their savings. They're not inclined to blame those of their neighbors who chose to avoid that for as long as they can. I think it's the culture up there is really don't question what your neighbors are doing. It's kind of a longstanding tradition. And I think that still holds. And so, you know, the people that made the choice to go legal, I wouldn't say that they regret it necessarily, but I think it's been so hard that they sympathize with people that have chosen to try and stay on what they call the traditional market or the unregulated market or even sometimes the free people's market.
All very interesting as we watch the outflow of marijuana legalization in our region, both in Oregon and in Northern California. Talking especially this morning about Humboldt County, Emily Wick is a writer for The New Yorker, and she has an article in the latest issue. Very interesting article. Recommend that you pick it up and read it, the latest issue of The New Yorker about growing cannabis in Humboldt County. Emily, thank you for braving the train situation in New York City and getting to a quiet location to talk with us this morning.
Thank you. It's great to be here.